Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining the HITECH Annual Report Workgroup. I'm pleased to welcome our co-chairs, Madel Briggs-Melanson and Aaron Meary, along with our workgroup members, Hans Botendijk, Hannah Galvin, and Elia Oliveira. We're expecting Anna McAllister to join us shortly, and Jim Jurgis will not be with us today. Public comments are welcomed, which can be typed in the Zoom chat or could be made verbally during the public comment period later in our meeting. So now I'd like to turn it over to Madel and Aaron to get us started and for their opening remarks.
Great, thank you so much, Mike. It's a pleasure to be with everyone today for our next annual report work group. We have some great items today that we just wanna wrap up our crosswalk of topics and then continue to move through our journey of getting the annual report together. So I'm really looking forward to today's discussion. Aaron?
Ditto, I'd say ditto, and let's get started. It should be fun, and let's knock this crosswalk out so we can really get into it.
Excellent, wonderful. Well, Aaron, how about I go through all of our meeting agenda and then some of our administrative tasks? And so what we're going to do today is that in terms of our meeting agenda, we're going to go over our next set of meeting schedules and also the next steps after that. We'll then dive into the discussion of the draft crosswalk of topics for the annual report. As Mike mentioned, we will definitely ensure that there is time for public comment. And then we'll do some last closing items at the very end of the meeting. Next slide. And so for the next upcoming schedule of meetings, next slide. So today is actually the 25th of September, and this is specifically for our annual report work group. So you can see all of the other meetings that we've had to date. And so this is our second to the last meeting in order to finalize all of our various different topics of the crosswalk. And then, of course, going into prioritizing those various different topics as well. During November, as well as December, we're going to make sure that we are finalizing some of the draft of the annual report for HITECH review and approval. And we expect for transmittal to Mickey, as well as to others, beginning in February through March of 2024. Next slide. And this is actually when the annual report work group will report out to the full committee. And so last month's meeting was canceled. And so this upcoming October 19th, we are actually going to provide an update on the status of the annual report and really present to the HITECH the crosswalk in order to see if there's any items that we need to include or exclude and any other discussions that may come from the full committee. As of November 9th, we will then continue to give an update on the status of the report, and we should be working on some of those different drafts. January 2024, we will review the draft of the annual report work group, and again, trying to gather that feedback from the full committee. And then in February, we hope to receive HITECH approval so that we can move forward with its transmittal. Next slide. And what is our all of our next steps for this group? Well, as mentioned, we will continue to develop the draft of the crosswalk with the gaps, opportunities, and recommended activities across all the various different target areas. And this is, hopefully we'll get this all wrapped up by next month. And then taking this crosswalk, as I just mentioned, on October 19th. And then from the crosswalk, we will start to develop the entire draft of the report itself so that we can then take it back to the full committee in November if needed. Next slide. All right, so I think the next part is to dive deep into the crosswalk, and we want to wrap it up just as Aaron mentioned, so that we can hopefully start getting to the prioritization of all of these different topics in order to get us a little bit more clarity and direction for the annual report. So Aaron, I will now turn it on over to you.
Sure. All right, let's get it going then. I'm going to start on page 6, I believe, is where we're going to be. All right. So we are at the priority target area of patient access information. And we need to talk about the patient-reported electronic health record update processes. And so I'll read these out loud. So again, the gap there is transparency about accuracy of patient data and an easy mechanism to update incorrect data. We've been talking about this for a while. And there's no simple way to do this and ensure that people can self-edit, self-correct their data of what's accurate or inaccurate. To the degree of it, you know, again, we're opening up now, you have conversation, right? opportunities, right? Better efficacy of data, better, you know, provenance of data, data accuracy, veracity, all sorts of things that people can then should be able to update, and then some activities. So what does this group think? Other thoughts, comments, questions, opportunities here? I'm going to start calling people's names. Thoughts? All right, Hannah, you're up.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would still request, I think, some clarification around HIPAA in regard to this, right? I think my reading and my understanding of HIPAA, and would certainly welcome others on the call to speak to this, is that at this time, patients can request an amendment to their record, but that we don't allow patients to just go in and rewrite to their record, right? And I think that I certainly think that now, in light of 21st century cures, where we're putting data back in the hands of the patient, perhaps that should be challenged, right? Senator Cassidy has an RFI out right now asking about this, among other things related to healthcare privacy and the level of control patients should have over their data. But my sort of understanding and read of HIPAA is that if a patient was to do this, it would still need to go back to the covered entity to approve the amendment and so any sort of technical way to do this would still need to be submitted and then reviewed. And we do have some messaging technology to do that today. So I'm interested in others' thoughts on that. So yeah. So I would say that this is dependent on a clarification on, you know, of HIPAA and whether there are any changes there.
So you're saying a direct modification of the medical record versus an addendum, right?
Right, so, exactly. Yeah. Right, whether patients could make any direct modifications.
Makes sense. Got it. Hans.
Yeah, I think on that note is that step from a request for changes and then have documentation thereof. Either it was declined for some reason, it was accepted, and then the record is reflective of that. It still will have, at least as we understand it, those steps of you request it, and then there's the follow-up documentation as to what actually happened. There is actually, HL7 does have a published implementation guide on FHIR on how one can manage requests for updates. But I think part of the challenge is that one of priority. How does this use case stack up to all the other use cases with USCDI, with FHIR US Core, with other public health? Where does it stack up in the collection of needs that we need to push more, or say we are fine with it because the other ones are more important? I think it's very much a priority issue, prioritization issue. Where does this fall on the rest of the list?
Interesting. That's good feedback, Hans. Medell.
Yeah, I actually agree with what Hannah and Hans just mentioned. And, you know, there's numerous different reasons for why patients ask to either add information to their electronic health record system or to addend the electronic health record system. And we have processes in place in order to make sure that those changes or those requests are, you know, rooted in the integrity and the veracity that we need it to be. But it's also one of those situations that I think from a patient standpoint, oftentimes, if you are requesting to change your medical record for whatever reason, it does tend to be a very arduous process. Oftentimes, it does tend to be, you know, using paper and emailing paper documents back. And so I wonder if this topic area or this concern came up, just thinking about how do we make this more streamlined, but it still seemed like it would need to go through the appropriate review processes if it is going to the EHR. And so, you know, with all of these other really important pieces of items that we are trying to address, I also agree with Hans of where is this on our prioritization list? And especially when looking at the needs of a patient, and is this something that is should be looked upon right now and addressed right now? Or do we still need to just even understand how that information flows electronically with our current processes and then modifying our processes to be even more efficient? So I feel like there's more to this that may need to be explored. It's just not simple as, hey, we need to create a simple technical fix.
Good feedback, Madel. Elio.
Yeah, so two opportunities that I can think of. One, last year, I think when we talked about this, I had a chance to meet with Ahima and a few of other folks to discuss, and we came up with a thought that there's likely a breakdown of probably like three ways that this record amending or fixing or changing could happen, right? There are probably records that cannot at all be edited, right? Let's say it's a lab result that came out of a device and, you know, the number is what it is. And I'm just giving an example, but may not be the most appropriate, but some elements that just could not be changed. There's some others that the individual himself or herself could request the change and can be done by a staff that, you know, has access to the systems. But the other ones that may require some medical knowledge to be validated before a change is actually executed, right? You can't just allow anyone to do. So that categorization might be an opportunity there to basically look at the US CDI and define what could happen with each one of those elements. The second opportunity that I see here is on the policy side, right? I have people that I know that have had challenges with this, that healthcare organizations have refused technically to basically make the changes that are very important to them. One of my colleagues, he has to go to the hospital with his dad every time to sit at the bedside to prevent certain things from happening just because the records are wrong and the organization won't fix them. So it seems like that, you know, a policy change to enforce some of these to protect patients might be necessary as well.
That's interesting. First of all, that's really sad for your friend, Eliel. That's a horrific story, but that's a real world issue of why this is so important to address. Also, you know, it brings up a question. I'm just asking out loud. I don't know the answer to this. Does that run afoul of the information blocking statutes in some which way, right? The hospital refusing to share information or refusing to identify, I don't know. Right? Is there consideration intersection with information blocking or potential needs of modernizing information blocking to incorporate that for future iterations? It's a great, I don't know the answer to that. I'm just asking out loud because that just seems very dangerous for the patient, you know, health, not allowing them to make updates like that. So it's interesting.
That's a great thought. I like that, Aaron.
Yeah.
Information blocking could be a good place to go.
Is there, you know, it's almost like a learning session, listening session. I would love to know things like that, right? And I think we're all hitting on that. Are there other activities that are going on? We talked about HL7, we talked about non-information blocking. You know, what are the other dimensions of intersection points? So we've talked about listening sessions. We've talked about other USCDI, you know, the potential future USCDI considerations. What else? What other activities should high tech look at, do we think?
Yeah, I would suggest in doing the listening session, maybe for some of those individuals directly, Aaron would probably be great. I remember one article I saw, I think it was in Dallas, of a health system and a patient situation that was on the news. And I remember reading that online as well. That would be very interesting to listen to as well, to highlight the challenge here. But that was exactly the same point, like the person would request a change and the health system would just not perform it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've got two physicians on the call right now, I'm certain in their course of care treating patients, they've encountered stuff that's wrong in the medical record. But they're like, that can't be right. So, I mean, it's got to be part and parcel, part of the job.
Yeah, but there also should be communication back to the patient, right?
Fair point.
Yes. Yep. And I agree with that, because there's, I can tell you that patient, and that's why I mentioned additions to EHRs plus amendments to some of the information. And sometimes patients may request for something to be added or removed. And it's like, no, this is essential. This is part of your medical record. I can't modify this. But then there should be that a closed loop communication back of saying, we appreciate your concern. Please let us explain this. And versus like there's zero acknowledgement of the patient's request. That is a huge issue.
Great point. Hannah, were you going to say something? I know you were off mute for a second.
No, thanks. Yeah, I mean, I agree with Manel. I also agree with, I don't remember who said it earlier, it might have been Hans, that... capturing that the patient did make the request somewhere, right, I think is helpful, right? And because if the patient disagrees with the health system's decision not to make the amendment, I think that can be, it can be helpful for patients to even have that documented somewhere that they disagree with what's written, even if the health system or the provider says, no, this is what I think is clinically important and needs to remain in the record. That said, I do agree with Medell that we have a lot on our plate, and I wonder whether this is coming up as a priority from, it is not something that I am hearing as a significant priority from my patient population, as much as concern about how their data is being shared. I'm not hearing as many concerns about or complaints about not being able to amend their data.
Mm-hmm. That's good for our, because part two of this is tiering, right? Priorities. We got to prioritize everything. So that's good. That's a good nugget right there, Hannah. Thank you for doing that. Hans, see your hand raised. Sorry, Hannah, will you finish? I'm sorry, didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh no, I was just gonna say, it all goes sort of part and parcel together, right? If I have information in the record that I don't wanna share, right? And that I wish that I had not put in the record,
right,
maybe I would then wanna withdraw that if I cannot granularly make a determination or control how that data is shared. But I have not heard that use case as much as the other.
So. Well, anecdotally, I'm actually hearing that because we have a very rapidly growing genetics program. And, you know, genetic data, if that gets shared with insurance carriers or inadvertently, that's a very gray area right now. And I'm saying this as an individual, just patient could be used against you, right? By an insurance carrier, whatever else. And so there's a lot of times you want to exclude certain affects from a record that it becomes a bit of a battle. So I think to your point, that clarity and that granularity is critical. Hans, give your hand raise.
Yeah, I would like to support Hannah's statement that from priority perspective, it's more likely and based on what's happening, that the concern is bigger on the side of sharing, privacy, security, appropriate sharing in authorized use than it is with changes to the record that can be made. But I do like Elio's suggestion on perhaps a listening session or something to get a little better inventory of what's out there. And to what extent current practices, they are perhaps not electronic, but what means do currently exist that with the HIM or otherwise that requests can be made, can be documented, and how that is being managed. So that also makes a difference in a way, is that are we looking at a gap because there's nothing there, or are we looking at a gap because it's nicer and easier to do it electronically? And for the volume at hand, is what we have, and this is not a value statement one way or the other, is what we have sufficient for some period of time that can help with prioritization of other things? Or do we believe that there is a significant gap there that we need to fill, perhaps not at the level of privacy and patient consent directives to really manage that well, But where does it sit on that scale? And that kind of insight from different perspectives, both what do we do today, manually, electronically, and what should we be doing, might help get some better insight as to where does it sit on the scale.
Got it. Okay. So we feel like we've got enough feedback here on this one. We go to the next topic. Let's move on. Okie dokie. All right, PGHD, lacking standards and interoperability among platforms. Again, PGHD, patient-generated health data, can be challenging to transfer into EHRs and time-consuming for prioritizing patients. PGHD device and software developers are not subject to health IT certification, play a critical role. This is very true. The challenge, standards to incorporate PGHD is and wearables and others are difficult. And then jurisdiction over patient device data spread across multiple federal agencies. And I would say state agencies too. Like in Florida, right, there was a new patient bill of rights, digital bill of rights that was passed, but where data can reside from Florida institutions, which has called into question a lot of PGHD partners that we had, where they store their data and new BAAs and all kinds of stuff. So to the degree of it, a lot of opportunity there. All right, so a lot of opportunities here. Open up to the group. What do you guys think? Elio, go for it.
So Aaron, as you all know, this is something that can get quite extensive very quick, right? The amount of data that can be extracted. I definitely believe that the standards are needed. I'm not so sure about the ability or enforcement that everything goes into the EHR, given the amount of data that we're talking about here. I don't find EHRs to be very, efficient in terms of data parsing. I'm fearful of this just ballooning in so much information that becomes unattainable for EHR vendors. And so I feel like an opportunity here is that, yes, there is a need for a standard so that everybody's playing by the same rules, so that we know what data is coming in and what way, but that then maybe the story is alongside of the EHR, but not in the EHR. And that's a specific distinction that I think may be important on this. But that's the thought that comes to mind that I feel important to raise.
So let me paraphrase, just make sure I understand what you're saying, Eliel. It's what's the why, or what's the there behind it, right? Why are we importing that data? What's the purpose? Do we care that Aaron had a latte at 3 p.m? Maybe if it leads to, dysrhythmia or something. But to your point, clarity on the why, is that what you're asking?
I think my clarity is on the way that EHR has been a operational system that's being used for care, right? It requires to perform at a certain level to be able to extract data and visualize at the course of care. When you add so much data here, that requires more of an analytics platform, because if you're just getting data from wearables, for instance, you're not going to be looking at the raw data. You're going to be looking at a trend or any movement, and that requires an analytics platform or things that can actually deliver data efficiently.
Right.
It's not how EHRs function, and I feel that could derail the performance. So it might be that the EHR vendors can bolt that on and make two work in one, but I feel like also that there should be standards, but not necessarily like it has to be built within the EHR system. So that's going to be quite a push of change, in my opinion.
Got it. Madel.
Thank you so much, Aaron. And so just so that the work group also knows a bit about this topic, this came from one of our high tech members. And one of the things, and it came from the other Aaron. And so one of the things that Aaron brought up was the challenge for providers to try to figure out, like, when information is needed, the challenge for providers to get this information from patient-generated health data. And so, I think it's an interesting topic, and I'll just say from my own clinical practice, I oftentimes see patients that come into the emergency department and maybe they have their own, for instance, insulin pump where it measures how much insulin is given at a certain point in time, and then also helping to track their blood glucose levels, or someone who actually does have a history of dysrhythmias, who's now coming in, who's complaining of chest pain or feeling a little bit faint. And we want to try to like bring that information out. And all of these different devices, let alone the devices of that, for instance, wearables or other apps that our patients are using, there's such a large content. And then some of that information is very important for clinical care, while some of the other information, as you mentioned, Erin, like, do I really care if you had a cup of coffee at a certain time? Well, I don't know. You know, it's probably a little bit less relevant than if your heart's going to a bad rhythm or if your blood sugar level is low because your insulin pump is providing too much insulin at that time. And so I think part of this, and because even the challenge here, which is so nicely stated, patient device data is in the jurisdiction of so many other federal agencies. And one, my question is, if there is a collaborative right now of all these different agencies that are specifically looking at health devices and applications, and which ones should potentially be interfaced with the EHR, or back to Eliel's point, is there another way in which we either one identify which patient-generated health data is critical for patient care and have some level of criteria? And then are those the ones that may get some type of health IT certification to interface with the EHR? Or is there just another way that we can easily kind of interface into those devices as needed? I just think that this is an important issue. I'm not quite sure that ONC is the agency that's supposed to oversee it, but it's definitely an important agency that should be working directly with FDA, FTC, and some of these others in which this may fall a little bit more in its line, and CMS, because this is also truly about quality of care. So I guess to summarize this, because Erin, you're probably going to tell me to summarize that, is one, I think this is an important topic, especially for clinically relevant data that we need to act upon. But then the question is, can we explore if there's a collaborative that already the agencies are all together and help to define what type of PGHD is important to potentially go into EHRs versus those that may be a little bit more peripheral?
That's a great point, Adele. That's a great point. And I liked your idea of, is there some sort of crosswalk or, you know, some sort of mismatch of all these efforts that are going on? And if not, if one doesn't exist, maybe we built one, right? Maybe is it part of the coordinating entity component of the ONC to help at least say this is what everybody's working on, right? It's what OCR is working on, FTC is working on, all these other people. So it's a great point, Adele. I love it. Hans.
Thank you. A couple of points here is that there's work to be done in a number of different areas. On the standard side, it is an understanding that if you talk about PGHD, what kind of provenance data do I need? So that whether I integrate it with the rest of the EHR or not, that I can track it so that in the right context, I can manage it separately or together with or contrast with. And the question is then going to come up for developers, well, where is it going to live? Elliot indicated, well, perhaps some of the data lives in analytics. Other times he says that we are being asked as patients to keep a log of something over the next couple of months, whatever, and you want to share that. Is that really needed to be into an analytics, or is it in the context of that the physician who asked for that wants to see that, but it's still PGHD? Are there opportunities that as there are perhaps more patient-focused apps evolving, that's where you can keep that data? Well, typically we talk about how can smart apps access to, EHRs. How can EHRs access a patient's favorite app that they can tap into it for a period of time to view it or otherwise? So I think there are many different aspects that are still not clear that asking ONC to progress a particular certification or other approach is somewhat premature. We're not quite clear what kind of data, where should it live? Therefore, what HIT are we looking at that should be able to support certain capabilities? And that to the point of Elliot on analytics, some of the data might be voluminous, coming in interest off in some analytics of sorts. The other kind of data is just say, over the last 2 months, I collected this data that I can share to get some insights that further decisions can be made on. I don't think it's clear enough yet. We need to keep it in mind and on the list. But I'm not convinced that we can recommend anything quite yet to ONCU as to what does it mean. There are some baby steps, initial steps being taken in the fire space on how to write vitals, how to start to do those kind of things, just writing. It's not even the question about whether it's a provider or a patient, but that I can write from an external site that I'm not on, it's an app or an environment outside the EHR, because that needs to have a level of trust, provenance, otherwise, to do that regardless of what I'm going to use it for. So I think steps are being taken, but the picture is not complete yet to say that this is the right thing that we can ask everybody to do.
Yeah, good point. And I like your point, Hans, that just because the data is there doesn't mean it's good data to import, right? The why. I mean, I have, case in point, I've been an avid jogger for over a decade, and I have my steps going back 5, 6, 7 years. I've never provided that to any physician primary care doctor I've ever met, even though whatever, right? They could say, Aaron, we want to know and prove that you walked your 10,000 steps every single day. I can prove it. Okay. But they don't care, right? They care my cholesterol and all this other stuff, but they don't care about how many steps. It's just like, we can tell if you have or not. So to the point of it, if I imported all that data to the EHR, it would just be there and be waste. So to your point, what's the validity of it, right?
Yeah, and if you can go in reverse and say that with whomever you have it, Fitbit, Garmin, or whatever, is that do you have temporary access that you can at least see that little nice graph that says, okay, your activity was stable, went up, went down, whatever, but just view it for a moment. And that's it. You don't need to do anything more.
Right. All right. Interesting. Any other comments on this? Hannah, any comments from you?
Yeah, what I was going to say is that, right, I think there's this standards piece about how you, technically, how do we bring this data and together? And then I think there's sort of the implementation guidance piece. To your point, Aaron, right, if you have all of this data, 7 years of data on your steps, right, how would you want to visualize that in a way that's meaningful? So you don't just have data, but you actually have information and knowledge in a way that would be meaningful to a provider looking at that. If you're doing continuous glucose monitoring, which has become very big, not just for diabetics, but right, there are all these commercial companies that are selling continuous glucose monitors, right? Like, how would someone visualize that in a way that's actually meaningful to them and doesn't increase provider burden? And so there's that piece, and how can there be some implementation guidance on how to process the data? And then also sort of where is all this data stored, right? And how can you store it securely? How can you store it in a way that does not increase processing times and slow systems down, right? Because we do have this exponential rise in healthcare data, and how are we going to manage that? I mean, we've had trouble managing that over the past 5 years. How are we going to manage that 15 and 20 years from now if we are storing all of that data centrally? And so I think that's, those are some things I think that need to be sort of thought through in addition to sort of how are we traversing the pipelines to share the data.
I like that. So data lineage, data storage, data, that whole process, yeah.
And metadata, I think, would be the one other thing that I would add, because I think just as a clinician, it is meaningfully different to me if the patient has taken their own blood pressure at home versus they, you know, we've taken the blood pressure in the office, in terms of if I'm seeing trends that are abnormal, right? Mm-hmm. We want to bring in and have them calibrate their blood pressure cuff against ours, right? And so having some metadata on, is this generated at home or patient generated data? And so do we have some recommendations on what type of metadata we might be in the provenance of that data? You know, maybe helpful for us to make some recommendations there. There may be published recommendations already, and I think there have been some folks who have published some of these recommendations, but consolidating some of those may be helpful.
Good points. Okay. I think, any other thoughts on this comment or this topic? All right. Let's go to the next one. User-friendly price cost data transparency. This one has been up on the HITACH for quite some time. It was a very, I recall the conversations even under Don Rucker, this conversation topic has come up over and over again. And it was timely because at that point, the price transparency rules and all that were in flight. So this is important for a lot of people on the HITACH. And I've even heard it recently from several members still wanting to push the envelope with it. It's a great topic for us to talk through. All right, so the gap there, price and coverage data provided for transparency can be difficult to understand, AKA it's only machine readable. or there's other rules limiting it, or some health systems refuse to comply, which is, I don't know how they get away with that, but they do, then the challenge, implementation, and compliance with price cost transparency rules are ongoing. This is true. Obviously, an opportunity there is visibility and transparency and trust with the general public, right? Giving them choices, which I think it's what we all strive for. I'll tell you, there's so many moving parts on this, and I keep hearing about updated rules and regulations coming. I don't even know where the latest is with price transparency. I know that we comply with it, but that's all I know of the health system. I just know it keeps pushing the envelope. So I'm curious thoughts or feedback here. Eliel.
Yeah, I think an opportunity here, Aaron, is in partnership with CMS, right? Given their API, the patient access API and payer APIs that they pushed and enforced that now exist, is to then for ONC and CMS maybe devise strategies around how to, and I think this is in the bucket of the patient access, right? So I'd love to see that, is that devise strategies on how this can be fomented or incentivized so that developers and others can actually build. If the tools are out there, the regulations are out, the APIs are available, how do we then incentivize users, developers to basically build the access that patients would need, you know, in terms of that? Because I think, again, I think the data is out there now, there's some enforcement, but we haven't seen any solutions on this front because maybe there is no incentive for anyone to build anything new. I would love to have an app that when I sign up for the doctor prescribing a medical service or treatment of any kind, that could actually tell me exactly from my insurance company what this is going to take. Why hasn't anybody built yet? I think maybe there might be an alignment there between CMS and ONC to sponsor or support some of those initiatives.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I talk to colleagues in the industry, some of them tell me it's a strategy not to put it out there because they don't want to give away their rates for payer negotiations. Some say that they're worried that the rates that they show and what the payers actually will reimburse are different, so they want to put erroneous information out there. Some say they truly can't calculate what the actual bill is because there's so many affiliates that partner with the health system that drop their own bills. It's almost impossible to forecast that, Aaron, your bill is $300 because all we charge the health system is $100. I'm just making that up. But there's all these nuances to it, to what you're talking about, Eliel, that, I mean, have to be unpacked. I've not heard anybody say, oh, I don't want Aaron not to be able to price shop, but it's always the but, right? But asterisk kind of thing is it trails off all these other things that cause a complexity. Hannah.
Yeah, I think the difficulty here, right, is really understanding healthcare billing in general, right? And understanding, having patients understand that because it is so complex, right? And it's one thing to be able to surface at the time that I prescribe an ambulatory medication what that copay is through PBM. That's relatively simple, or potentially a lab test, a copay for a lab test. Mm-hmm. You start to get into health system negotiated payments for multiple tests, and thinking about if you are right, then there is, it's not just nuanced sort of in that way that it is nuanced in that way that how do you negotiate this rate, but also it's clinically nuanced. If you get one test at this health system, maybe you have a better negotiated rate there. Maybe the other test, it would be better negotiated rate in another health system, but it actually is, ends up being cheaper and better for you to get all of your sort of related care at the same health system, right? Mm-hmm. And so figuring that out can be very complicated. And I don't know that many patients are really willing to price shop to that extent. If you need, say, cancer care, am I going to try to get my this chemo treatment at this system, but my MRI over at this system because, I'm going to negotiate that rate? And so I think, what can we do to really make it as simplistic as possible for patients. I don't know how many patients out there are going to, right? They want the best care, and how many people are going to price shop to that granular level. So how can we maybe rethink this in a way to provide that information, but provide it and provide also the bundled care and that in sort of a bundled manner so that people can really understand what it is they are getting for their condition.
Yeah, it would be interesting. I think we're all saying the same thing here to kind of understand from CMS what their next steps are, right? And I'm personally curious what pressure is going on the payer side, right? What kind of agitations are occurring there? Because it seems to me, and this is my personal perception only, that the bulk of the onus of this work is on the provider health systems. And while I understand that that's where care is delivered, what about the payers, or at least in claims data, right? And getting data out there to show that. I have not seen, I'm not saying it doesn't occur, but I have not seen major efforts or public shaming of the payer information as much as they have on the provider side, at least I haven't read it personally. So it would be interesting to hear from CMS, what's up? Like, what's the next step? How do we make sure this is a two-way street? Eliel, sir.
Yeah, just a comment, Aaron, on what you said about the sensitivity and why folks may not want to make this available and all that. But I think that's where maybe the opportunity here, it should be just for the patient itself, right? And what I mean by that is making the data publicly available, the pricing may not be a good strategy. I agree to start with, but if we just have a solution where the patient can know, what that's gonna be for them, that to me is a huge advancement to just focus on that. Whether if it's gonna be a safe email delivered to the patient or if it's an app that basically deliver those details. But I mean, we all know that this is the only industry or anywhere that I guess you getting a service but you have no idea what it's going to cost, and so maybe focusing just on the patient as opposed to anybody accessing pricing information could be a good target. And the other thing that I would say, maybe the opportunity here is to start small. Because there are too many things like we are talking about here. This can get very hairy pretty quick, right? As opposed to say, okay, if you've been prescribed labs or specific groups of things, we should be able to know what that's going to take based on your, plan very quickly, Other things, no, but at least start somewhere, right? That individuals will get some notification of what that's going to be. Right now, we just don't know anything, and that's a pretty bad place to be as a client, as a paying person.
I agree. Although I would say another service industry that has variable pricing is your favorite rideshare apps, right? It seems like things cost three times as much, but we won't go there. That's not the point of this talk, but everything is variable these days. All right, Hans, you're up next. Hans, you may be muted, my friend.
Let me go off mute. The progress has been made in some areas, and other areas we clearly need to go a bit, quite a bit further in order to make it work. And I'm wondering whether this is a time to reflect back and understand how far have we gone. In some areas, we do have some standards, but they're not necessarily adopted. Or I like your point, Aaron, from earlier, is that I need to stitch together across a health system. Everybody's contributing. Different parties that you're working with on what is the total sum of it. If I have the overall plan, it's relatively, easy to get the information on what that might cost. But I need to have a good plan. I need to know all the components that are in there. And that's why I would agree with Eliel. If there are opportunities to start simpler, more targeted, more individual services, I would love to know that we have in our area, we have, if we need to get a CT scan or an MRI scan, we have 3, 4, 5 different places you can go to. Which one is actually going to be the most cost effective for my health plan? It's at least a simple, singular decision. Which pharmacy should I go to beyond if I want to have a choice and I'm not going to go to the same one all the time, or the lab, which lab am I going to go to? I think there are opportunities that if the intent is for consumers to be more informed and make decisions on availability of prices and comparisons, start where it is where you can make those choices in a little bit more of an isolation where it still has good value for everybody, and then begin to build it up, because it is complex. We've always looked at it the moment that you need to go beyond a singular doc on what they're going to do with the patient and provide an estimate is a substantial difference between a coordinated effort of a care team that spans multiple organizations. And we have to be very careful to take that last step before we actually figure out how to do the first step. But how far have we gone? Are there opportunities that we can look at and say, hey, there are some best practices that we can already start to share, which means is that can we get a group together to share with what they have done? How far did they get? What are they still missing?
Good points. Good points, Hans. Medel.
What I'm going to say is that, number one, I always feel that all of our patients should always have as much information as possible for them to make data-informed decisions, and we should always be transparent. However, there is a difference between price and cost when it comes to all of healthcare. And as we all know, the price is an arbitrary number that oftentimes healthcare systems or providers make, while of course the cost to the patient may actually be their out-of-pocket cost based on their insurance plans. So overall, as we all know, this is a very complex issue. And for us to really, I feel, move the needle, which I feel is what has been some of the challenges behind all of these transparency rules, for us to truly be there to support our patients so that they can make informed decisions, that does require, as you mentioned, Aaron, having the health plans really demonstrate what will be the out-of-pocket costs for each patient. But then that means that has to be incorporated someplace into all of these systems that our patients are looking at. And we have thousands of various different health plans, let alone how even showing the cost and even the prices demonstrates the level of inequities that we have within our healthcare systems and that we have baked into the way that our healthcare overall industry functions. So I feel that while we can think about some of the technical pieces of this, and we can think about some of the standards and the additional policy pieces, I think that this overall topic is so broad and so complex, and it's rooted with so many nuances. I really don't know if we're ever going to get to a point, at least based off of what we have on the table in the country today, of really having true cost transparency that actually does benefit our patients consistently and equitably across the country. And so for me, it makes me wonder, is this the right thing for us to do of thinking about how to demonstrate this transparency, or is this another area that we go back to the policies or advocate for changes in the policies so that they are created in a more equitable way and that it does ensure accountability for health plans, for our governmental payers, the way it should, to really ensure that all patients understand what they are responsible for when it comes to making decisions about their healthcare receipt. So just a couple of thoughts. I really don't have recommendations on this one, except for I think that there needs to be a more understanding of this and more policy advocacy, because in my mind, it's still not equitable. We're still not at a place that's really going to help our patients the way that it should.
Well said. Well said, Medel. Well said. Hannah.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I agree with Medel. I don't know that there is an action item for ONC at this point, other than potentially for us in our conversations with CMS. This would be an area that I would like to ask them more about and understand what their intentions are and where this is on their roadmap. Mm-hmm. But I don't see a very specific action item for us at this point. I think potentially we could put this in our parking lot, be intentional about anytime CMS is at the table with us asking them more about this. And potentially this may be on our annual report roadmap for a future year, but I don't see a specific action item for us at this point.
Yeah. Good points. Great point, y'all. Okay. I think we've gone through this topic. Just the time we're going to keep going then. Next topic, Michelle. Is it the one at the bottom here? No. Is it? Is the one in brown font one we have to fill out as well?
Hi, sorry, I was double muted. I think you're there's one at the bottom, the parking lot list, the very bottom. Let's go to the next page. Right. Decision support interventions. So this is one you guys started and then asked for ONC to take a look and give more direction on where to go with it. So we added a sentence in the opportunity column to get more specific around the FAVES, like what areas in particular we cared about. And we did get good feedback from our technology side of the house. And then we're proposing activity for you to discuss where we could use some feedback. But you can go further than that if you want to.
Okay. All right. So in particular, it would be helpful to gain more consensus across health IT industry. Okay. All right. So listening session is a proposed activity for the HITACH for us to consider. Are there other activities around DSIs and predictive models? I can tell you there's a lot of worry about DSIs with the FDA. I know that doesn't fall into the ONC bucket, but there's a lot of conversation, do DSIs suddenly become a medical device, right? There's been a lot of advocacy around that. I think double clicking on DSIs is important. And I've heard loud and clear from my physicians that they don't want to slow down the velocity because you get encumbered with bureaucratic red tape. So let's see, Hans, you're first.
I have a question around the opportunity and the intersection with ONC. The question is that as you have DSI that's being developed, there is an FDA component to it. There is a overall analytics component to it. There's the patient component to it that then all come together into understanding as DSI is being used, how appropriate is it or not in a particular context. How much is that really ONC versus other parties? Is it really that ONC can pull that together? I think in what they are doing and what they've proposed with HTI-1 to have transparency by the provider, they have focused a lot on the EHR to make it transparent, but in the end, it is about the developer, the provider of the DSI to create that transparency and that involvement. I'm not convinced whether that is ONC beyond ensuring that certified HIT makes wherever that information is available can help make that further available to the users of that. And if it's EHR, it's typically more provider focused. If they are other parts, how do we make that extensible to the patient and the caregivers as well? What's the role of EHRs there or other HIT to do that? But I'm not sure whether this opportunity falls in ONC's wheelhouse as currently described.
Good points. Good point. Madel.
Yes. And so we initially brought this onto the crosswalk after our recommendations for HTI-1. And I think that that's why it came into this report work group. And DSI is, of course, I think near and dear to everybody's heart, definitely near and dear to mine, and especially making sure that they are built and tested, implemented, and monitored in the appropriate way. And we know that there a large amount of this, just as what Hans just mentioned, is falling within FDA and other agencies. But I believe this was really specifically talking about along the lines of transparency when the DSI is interfacing with certified health IT, what type of standards there would be to ensure that the DSI did meet the FAVES criteria of being fair, appropriate, valid, effective, and safe. And so we really still don't know what's coming out of HTI-1 since we don't have the final rule yet. And so I know that that's what we were saying, like maybe we should table this until we get that final rule to see how they developed it. But I do agree that with all of the work that's going on around DSI and all the discussions about the ethical use of DSI and other forms of artificial intelligence, really understanding all the different entities that are working on this and holding that listening session to say, how is everyone truly defining fair and appropriateness, I think is very important so that we're all using the same lens, the same terminology, we have the same objectives, because looking at all of the various different approaches from different agencies and societies, everyone's going about things a little differently. And so does ONC have a role potentially to play in the future? And especially as when we are bringing in the DSIs and if it is, of course, truly through some type of certified health IT linkage there, that we say these are the criteria that ONC may want to consider for them to say that, yes, these DSIs do meet the FADES criteria. So that may be an area holding listening session and then further explanation of what ONC's final definition will be in order to say what's fair and appropriate.
Great points. LEL.
Yeah, so I'm thinking that a lot of what this is related to in terms of predictive intelligence gets very tricky, right? I'm putting a link here on the chat that AHRQ has done a lot of work on CDS. And I've delved into that quite a bit because that's one of the things that we do with our work here in our research. And the conclusions on that is that it hasn't been very successful because the integration of CDS across EHRs is very difficult because the data doesn't match. Each EHR has a different way that clinical decision support can be done. My point being there is that we don't even have a mechanism to deliver decision support that's uniform. And then we are talking about now something that's going to bring, you know, have predictions or AI. We don't have a mechanism for delivery yet. So it might be that the place for ONC maybe to start would be on clinical decision support. Patient-centered decision support is another one that ARC is exploring quite a bit. So patients are part of their own care. Once that's kind of well established, that all EHRs have a specific standard that they have to follow to deliver clinical decision support, then we can come back to the subject of predictive model and AI and other things.
Good point, Celio. Hans. Maybe double muted, my friend.
I have too many mute buttons that I need to go turn them off. I think some of the comments that Manel made, I would agree with, is that there needs to be good clarity that we all are understanding and assessing whether something is fits all the FAVE's aspects. And I'm wondering whether that is much more of a transparency and where fundamentally what ONC has done so far of awareness of what it is and that can be followed. But I'm not sure whether there is a clear arbiter to say is that this is or is not fair or appropriate or valid or effective or safe, that we can say we have clarity around that, that we know how to measure that, other than that we can speak to it. We can clarify on that, which others may or may not agree with. So that makes it for me very hard to understand what ONC's role is in that, in this, other than as it evolves, help ensure that where such DSI is used, that the users of it have the ability to get access to that information, whatever that might be. But the whatever that might be falls somewhere else. And I have no idea where at this point in time for whether it's one place, five places, where that fits to have insight into that so that everybody can then make an informed decision to say this is appropriate to be used for this context or it's not, or it might be for some, but it's not for these others. I don't see ONC getting to that level of detail of having declarative statements around that.
Hannah.
Yeah, I agree with Hans on that, right? I mean, all of these qualities, all of the thieves' qualities are relatively qualitative, right? And so having some quantitative approach or at least a little bit more of a metrics-based approach can be helpful to be able to compare apples to apples, right? When I think about safety, right? There are some people who are going to say that nothing is safe because there could be one edge case that may not be safe. And I think AHRQ does have some guidelines around this that are used by patient safety organizations in trying to evaluate how safe is safe, how unsafe is unsafe, and sort of have some measurable standards here may be helpful in informing these conversations and even a listening session and how that could be used more effectively to gain some of this feedback.
Other comments or questions on this? All right, and Medell, I think you had a good point at the beginning. There are forthcoming rules, right, which we got to see finalized too to see where this goes. So I think it's great conversation. But as we've done in historical reports, you know, this may be one when we get to prioritizing the table until that comes out, because it may reframe some of our thoughts depending where it finally lands. And there's some great task force coming up with the HTI-2 task force and others that Mickey has alluded to coming up soon in the fall that further add clarity, right? Probably have further touch into DSIs and others. So more to come. Okay. Did we have any others, Michelle, that we had to go back and do?
We do have one on page 3 that needs a little more clarity around pharmacy interoperability. We proposed language based on what we heard because you guys had it together in one topic and we split them apart to pull out long-term care into separate and then address what we had heard so far about labs. But I don't think we went deep enough yet in pharmacy to be firm on the language. But it's the challenge in particular, I think, that needs some clarity, but then it flows through to the other columns.
All right, so this is the lab reporting pharmacy one specifically, Michelle?
Yes, the one highlighted.
So make sure. So make sure on that one. All right. So gap, lack of standard use of standards, lack of consistent use of standards. I can read today. Laboratories and pharmacies create a barrier, challenge, LOINC, SNOMED, et cetera, pharmacies, TBD, opportunity to explore requirements for reference labs meet US CDI standards, explore requirements for pharmacies to apply to NDC and RX NOM codes. That'd be great. They all could standardize on that. That would be helpful. Activities, right? What could the CMS be doing to incentivize, refer to high-tech report of national coordinator on pharmacy and interoperability emerging therapeutics, and then a high-tech report of national coordinator of public health data systems, recommendation 38. All right. So, Michelle, you're asking us for do we agree with these recommendations and or do we want to add anything to it, correct?
Well, I'm saying that recommendations, yeah, you can change this if you want, but we tried to back up into what the challenge and opportunity were that you're addressing here with those recommendations. And I think it's where the challenge, connecting that back to the general topic, we just need more of a link that makes it flow through better. That's really the column in the challenge, the second bullet that's missing right now.
Got it. Hans.
A little bit of maybe some insight of the discussions around the pharmacy task force that might help with the challenge. While on the laboratory side, there are a lot of connectivity points already there, a lot of interoperability already occurring, and therefore the focus on the vocabulary to create consistency, enhance it, get better use of it, makes a lot of sense in that context. With pharmacies, I think one of the themes that is coming up is that the actual connectivity beyond the filling of a prescription, that as pharmacists are getting more and more integrated into the care team, become more and more part of the test to treat processes, whether it's for emergency scenarios or in normal operations, is that there's actually the pipelines, the connectivity is not quite there yet. So it's not really specifically only about the use of certain codes, but it is about getting them connected, the pharmacy and the pharmacist, getting them more fully connected with the other providers so that everybody in the care team has access to the data that they need. So pharmacies have increasing amount of data that there might be tests or there might be some observations or other documentation. They administer certain medications. How does that come back to the other providers, the primary care doc, et cetera? And the other way around, as information becomes available from providers, how does that become available to pharmacists to help there in their decision making? So I think that's probably more the theme, the challenge of how do we connect pharmacists and pharmacists better bidirectionally with everybody else. And then the task force is looking at a variety of different things on how to advance that. But that seems to be the biggest challenge at this point in time that we need to look at.
Yeah, I can tell you firsthand experience, Hans, that I've had EHR vendors push back on opening up various data feeds to various pharmaceutical information, NDC information, others, because of worry of some sort of NDA, violation of NDA and whatever else. So it's not just technical interoperability, but how do you play the same sandbox together, right, and work through these things? So yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, and the elements in the discussions have been around, are there currently contractual barriers in some of the information sharing in the different parties, not just between providers and other providers and pharmacists, but are there those there? As TEFCA evolves, are there opportunities that they really need to make sure that there are no barriers for pharmacists to participate in the treatment use case and other ones as well? As you're sharing information, let's try to avoid that we're going to have point to point, but how does proprietary solutions, how can we do that? And at the same point in time, recognizing that the incentives that have been out there for hospitals, inpatients, outpatients in a certain category of settings, like long-term care, that hasn't had much of that. Pharmacies have not had much of that either. So what are the levers? What are the incentives to help everybody connect? Standards are there, networks are there, the acknowledgement of the authorities are there, but how do we now make that truly happen?
Makes sense. Other comments, questions, thoughts to add or clarify what Michelle's asked us for around laboratories and pharmacies? Michelle, to me, it reads pretty good. I mean, although we're waiting output, some more output, right, to what Hans is saying. I mean, this ties, in my mind.
I'm wondering if, would there be more bullets from what Hans just explained? Is there anything we would add to or change around the opportunities and recommendations? Because right now, I think those are a little bit more lab-focused still.
Perhaps under the gap might be a little bit more that it's not only a consistent use of standards by pharmacies. I'm just picking on that particular aspect of it. It is the infrastructure, the funding, the ability to actually connect, as well as contractual, as well as clarity on the authorities that are there. So it's not only the standards. It's building up the entire ecosystem to be able to get more data shared across the parties.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly what you said, Hans. I mean, we always think of the big box retailers, but you know how many independent pharmacies there are, mom and pop pharmacies that get fills and scripts that still live off of paper scripts? Thousands and tens of thousands of them everywhere. So they don't have, some of them don't even have EHRs or anything electronic. They still send faxes.
Right. So, and phone calls.
Right. And phone calls, right. Lots of them. Okay. Other comments or thoughts?
And just what you said there, Aaron, is a big problem when you try to then, you know, service like the FDA, for instance, in surveillance, and the fact that you're not capturing consistently and with these, you know, mom and pop shops that you're describing, you know, that are not necessarily either coding the right way, and like Hans was saying, that cannot even connect. So having that pharmacy data well-defined, highly accessible, it's very important for many aspects, not only for care, but research as well, and surveillance.
Any other feedback on this topic, y'all? Hannah or anybody? All right. Okay. Michelle, any other topics?
No more specific topics. It's more of a chance to go over the whole crosstalk as, you know, one entity or by topic area, or sorry, target area, groups of topics, to see if you have any changes before we head into our next high-tech update, next high-tech meeting.
Okay. Medell, do you want to take the stab of doing
that? I'll give you a break, and you've been doing wonderful talk speaking. So let's go up to the very top of the crosswalk. And so, as Michelle just mentioned, and now we're almost getting to the point where it's time for us to really think about the prioritization as well. And so maybe we can do a little bit of that, of reviewing each section, and then we'll think about some of the prioritization right after we review the sections, because sometimes it's good, now that we've done all of this work, and especially for those that are new to the annual report group, we see all the topics that we place on the crosswalk, and then we go back and say, is this a priority this year for the annual report work group, or is this a priority that we may want to wait for another year or so to add or include or explore more at a later time? So let's first go over the entire crosswalk from beginning to end very quickly so that we can all be reminded of what's in it and see if there's any modifications or changes that we need. So the very first topic area is first starting off with design and use of technologies that advance health equity. And the very first topic was focused on artificial intelligence, algorithmic bias. Won't go too deeply into all of this, but I'll just mention the challenges and some of our proposed activities. Challenge AI that furthers inequities and bias is a significant concern that must be balanced with potential benefits as policymakers develop efforts to regulate AI. What we're proposing is, number one, hold a listening session in collaboration with relevant HHS agencies, focus on the current landscape and both private and public AI initiatives. We're also recommending support the development of guidance to assist providers, certified health IT developers, and other health IT developers with the implementation of the HTI-1 final rule, since we know there's so much that's in the HTI-1 final rule. So first to start, any additions or revisions for that one? Oh, okay, go ahead, Hannah.
No, not really a revision, but I think our focus here is really on bias, whereas in the DSI piece, which I know we're still waiting on the final rule for, the focus is really more on the transparency of the algorithm, correct? I mean, I think part of my thought is, do we want to tackle both of these together, right? Because the transparency of the algorithm also helps to reveal the bias or any biases in the algorithm. So I think that would be my only thought is, do we want to address those two sort of somewhat in tandem? Mm-hmm.
That's actually a really good point that you bring up. If we're looking at overall all artificial intelligence and all the various different forms of DSI and a lot of the same recommended high-tech activities is the same thing that we did include in that most recent area that we were talking about in terms of the FAVES criteria. So let's take a look at that and see, because they are tracking very similarly. Are there any objections of adding those two together?
No, I think that makes a lot of sense, because that allows us to holistically address that, whether it is advanced generative AI or whether it is simpler DSI on that scale, it's still DSI. It still has all the factors of FAVES in there that need to be addressed and that we had the same conversation around. So I think combining the two makes a lot of sense.
Wonderful. So maybe what we'll do is make a recommendation to modify the topic name to artificial algorithmic bias and transparency so that it actually is more encompassing of both areas.
I like that.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Okay. Excellent. Good job, team. Let's go on to the second one as well. Missing health IT infrastructure for health equity and social drivers of health data. The challenge in particular, yes, we have some gaps. The challenge we're referring to is additional standards are needed to support the collection and electronic exchange of health equity and SDOH data. Many CBOs lack the IT infrastructures in order to do so. Our proposed recommendations at this time are hold a listening session to identify gaps and SDOH standards, including those that have been developed and are under development, as well as to explore the development of a framework to support the adoption, implementation, and use of health IT by CBOs. And this should, of course, include strategies to support both private and secure exchange of the use, including pilot demonstrations. Any additions or revisions?
I have a question. I have no disagreement with the scope and the content as defined here, where the focus is on CBOs. What I'm curious about is that in this context, are there other data sources, whether it's public health, other data elsewhere, that provide input into that can advance the collection and the use of this data appropriately, or are we only focusing on CBOs as a source of that data?
That is a very excellent question because, again, yes, we have CBOs, but we have our public health entities as well. And we have even other, you know, some people call social service agencies right, very differently from CBOs. But then we also have all of our post-acute care facilities. So that's a really great question if we want to expand all those different data sources so that it's not just focused on our community-based organizations. I would say yes, because it's pretty much the same in order to collect social driver data and for that true interoperability. It's not just one entity in itself. It tends to be multiple types of data sources. So I would say yes. And Elio, your hand's up.
Yeah, I was going to answer to that to say that there are electronic systems, right, that capture referrals and assessments of needs that out there. They're called directory of services for social services, and they do not necessarily comply with standards, you know. So that's another source, Hans, that I think is quite important. There are some that are trying to integrate to some EHRs, but it's like based on partnerships, not necessarily with following a standard that everybody can take advantage of accessing that data. I even covered that a little bit in my demo when I, you know, presented in a face-to-face meeting. That's a key set of electronic systems that are out there that is a source of information that right now they're no necessary. I mean, the standards are there, but they're not necessarily enforced. And so it doesn't get followed and creates a big hole in terms of coordination, in terms of getting this national infrastructure to be able to understand what's taking place. Like if we had another COVID right now, we wouldn't know at a national level what are the needs that the population is faced with. It's all manual process. And if you remember, social needs was a big challenge. I mean, I remember here in Austin would have, you know, I don't know, what is a big name brand of car, Porsches driving through the, you know, the food banks to pick up food, because you could have money, you could have all kinds of resources, but doesn't mean that you could find what you need during the pandemic. So the need for coordination here is quite very relevant, and those systems should be able to communicate with EHRs and others. So,
great. So yeah, so it sounds like you're also in favor of expanding to include just other data sources from other organizations too that we know play a significant role. Great, Hans.
Yeah, and I'm not sure whether this is part of this one or whether it sits somewhere else or on the side. Is that one of the challenges is also what's the best source for certain SDOH? It's not always the EHR. It's not always the community. It's not always social services. It depends on the kind of data and the context. What's actually the best place that has the best opportunity for either higher quality or more completeness of the data to get it? And that's one of the challenges that exist, that at times we, in the way that programs are currently developed, focusing on what can we get into certification, there's the tendency to look at EHRs because they are the most certified. But are they always the right ones to focus on if we want to get better data that is useful for everybody? And does that mean that we need to get other communities, generally communities, that we need to get them included? So I think part of the challenge is that by expanding the connectivity to other systems in the community, social services, et cetera, is that we can better connect the best sources of the data.
Very good point. Very good point. So at least for this one, it sounds like we are, number one, going to expand it beyond just CBOs based off of the comments that were just mentioned. But then also, Hans, for that last point, maybe that's part of the proposed recommendations, explore the development of a framework and or who's actually, whatever that setting may be best in order to connect to make sure we're exchanging that SDOH data, because the EHRs may not be the best one. So that may go directly back into that high-tech activity with a little bit more kind of finesse and explanation there. Excellent. So we have about 4 minutes until our public comment. So we'll keep on going reviewing. Just being a refresher for everyone, what we already discussed. So the next one was reducing the digital divide, which was more of a general aspect of it versus reducing the digital divide, and which is going to be more specific in the next topic. The challenge here, lack of or limited access to broadband and mobile internet is correlated with worse patient health and public health outcomes. Our recommendation was to encourage ONC to work with other HHS agencies and standards developers to adopt standardized SDOH data elements about a patient's internet access status and health literacy status. And so that's what we have there. Any questions or revisions there? Okay, I'll raise my hand really quickly just to make sure that we're very, very clear. Just going back to Michelle as well as the AI team here, I think that it's really important to also make sure we're talking about standard data elements about a patient's internet access, but there's a difference also between digital literacy and health literacy. And so I think that that's, while the standards may not, it may be a little bit harder to put that into standards, but really exploring how to appropriately assess for patients' internet access status, digital literacy status, and health literacy status, because those are three separate pieces that are very important for what contributes oftentimes to the digital divide, especially when using health IT. Okay, and Eliel?
Yeah, so the point that I had here is that, as you all know, the country has put a lot of funding recently on telehealth, right? On internet access pretty much in any rural area of the country, but there is still quite a bit of missing connectivity depth, right? Individuals, and I think we talked a little bit about this when we discussed this topic, is that we find in our work, because we work a lot with underserved populations, that whenever we need them to be involved in their care, that involves getting access to their data, being part of the care coordination electronically, they don't have the access. They may not have the service line, the cell phone services to just be connected. And so meaning if someone is already suffering with challenges, healthcare, food, whatever that is, it's just getting exacerbated by the fact that they don't have access. So now, yeah, we did fund quite a bit of infrastructure build out to make sure that internet is, in rural areas and everywhere. But I think that probably missed the individuals. And there are services out there that they can get for free and all that. The process is just hard. It's not an automated process that allows individuals to be part of their own health. Even though I'm saying all that, I'm thinking to myself as well, but is this ONC's job to get into? Not sure. But there is a place there to make sure that folks understand that individuals are the ones that suffer the most are being further being affected by the fact that don't have access to healthcare information and to their data.
I cannot agree more, Eliel. That was a really important piece, and we have to always keep that centered in context. So we're going to pause everyone right now and go to public comment. So Mike, I will ask you to come on camera and lead us through public comment.
All right. Thank you, Madel. We're going to open up our meeting for public comment. If you're on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you're on the phone only, press star 9 to raise your hand, and once called upon, press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. So let's pause this for a moment to see if any members of the public raise their hand. I'm not seeing any, so I'll turn it back to our co-chairs to close this out. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mike. And so during these last minutes, what we'll do is just go over a little bit of homework that we are going to ask the annual report work group to do. So we're trying to still go through the rest of the crosswalk. And please, if you all can definitely go through the rest of the crosswalk, if there's any minor revisions or tweaks or small additions that you have, please send that to Aaron and myself, as well as to the ONC team by October 9th, okay? So again, by October 9th, and we'll send out an email reminder about this. But in addition, as you're going through, there is that area, that column on the far right-hand side, because we do have to start thinking about the prioritization of some of these different topics. So already, as we've already seen, there may be some areas that we can collapse into one. There may be some areas that we want to bump up in priority or deprioritize. Please go through this crosswalk and add your revisions and start thinking about the priorities, because we want to continue to move on through so that the rest of our ONC team can start to take all these items after we present this crosswalk to the full committee and start to develop some of the drafts. So just a bit of homework between now and October 9th so that we can wrap up all of this amazing work and all these great ideas and recommendations that the work group has presented. Aaron, any other comments or less? Looks like Hans has a question.
I think Hans has a question. Now, Hans, go for it real quick. You double muted again? Maybe double muted again.
Anyway, we know the story right now. The only question on the last column is that how would you like us to mark that? If we believe that the priority should be high, just to indicate go up or down, or just use 1, 2, 3, but just to make sure.
Great question. Yes. So for our, can we go back to the crosswalk so we can all see the crosswalk together? We'll leave public comment slide and go back to the crosswalk. Excellent. So if we scroll to the very bottom, there is a legend that we have used historically. And so if you see the legend, we have right now for the legend for the tiers, immediate, meaning yes, we absolutely need to include this now in terms of our annual report. And then there's longer term, which is maybe we can table this for another year or so. So one of the things for the tiers, at least, and Michelle and Aaron, correct me if I'm wrong if I'm explaining this, but we do want to say, like, if we think that this is an immediate aspect or immediate topic we need to address, you can just put an I. And if you think it's more longer term, you can just put an LT.
And then put our name with it so that we know.
Yeah.
And then take some sort of an average or consensus.
That sounds perfect. And then just feel free to send it back to us. And then we can sort of get some of the balls rolling in terms of understanding where each one of the members fill in terms of the topics and their priorities for right now. Excellent question. Any more questions about our homework assignment? Yes, Anna.
So we're going to each send you back a version of the Excel spreadsheet as opposed to putting it in a Google sheet and working out together. Just clarifying. Yes. All right.
So So take this direct crosswalk, which is in an Excel, and or whichever version it is, track your changes in case you have other revisions to any of these topics. So yeah, track all your changes. And then in that tiered far right column, put I for immediate, which means let's include it, this report, or LT for it's okay if we table this for another year or so.
Okay. All right, y'all. I'll just close it out. Thank you all for a great discussion, a great discussion overall on the topics. I think we got through the crosswalk, got through some groupings here. I look forward to prioritization. Have a great afternoon, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye, y'all.
All right, bye-bye.